Hey guys, this is Sony Artisan of Imagery, Jason Lanier, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. Springtime means tax time, and their cloud-based accounting software helps freelance photographers and small business owners get their lives back and get back to shooting by making paperwork a breeze. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 63. Jason Lanier on the jerk that ran over his gear. In this episode, a truck in Texas disrupts a Jason Lanier shoot and aims for his gear. Is Sony's rumored DSLR like A9 on the way? Gap Kids makes an error in judgment with a photo. And listener Terrell wants to know if his flash is dying. All that and more in episode 63 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Jason, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. We have a story coming up in this episode featuring Jason, so I thought what better time than now to have him do an intro. Jason Lanier is not only a Sony artisan of imagery, he's a popular workshop leader, educator, and outspoken critic of the nonsense that plagues this industry that we all love, and I greatly appreciate that about him. When you call it like you see it, the haters and trolls come out, and Jason Lanier is very familiar with this. I've gotten to know these haters and trolls myself as well. If you want to be entertained while learning photography, you will definitely not be bored if you watch the videos on Jason Lanier's YouTube channel. To see these videos, including the one regarding the incident that we talk about here in this episode, head on over to his website at jlpros.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 63 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Since you follow this podcast, you surely know the name Jason Lanier. And like me, not afraid to put it all out there and speak his mind. And I really respect that, as I said. Well, Lanier was recently doing a shoot at Echo Lake Park in Fort Worth, Texas, when things took a bit of an unexpected turn. The kind of turn that, as photographers, we hope doesn't happen, especially if your gear isn't insured. I reached out to Jason, and he was kind enough to provide us with some audio explaining what happened, his feelings, and an update on the situation. So let's listen to that.
So, in brief, really what happened that day was we were out, and I was doing a one-on-one training session with a client, and we were out in the Dallas-Fort Worth, really the Fort Worth area, and found this park, and there was, you know, lake there and other stuff, and we went around and set our bags down, and, you know, I have videos out on this of both the shoot and the incident, separate videos, and we shot for maybe about 20, 25 minutes, and there are five of us there between myself, my client, his fiance, and my two assistants, six of us, because I have my videographer too. And you know, as customary, when we're there, I set down my bag and set it right next to the 3 feet from the tripod of where my client was set up. And you know, about 25 minutes into the shoot, this guy drives up and comes on, takes a big huge truck and takes it on to the trail, and you know, drove over my bag. And you know, I think the craziest thing is that the clanging, we could hear the clanging of the lenses and stuff hitting the metal on the truck, and it's just almost like it's horrible. To be honest with you, it's kind of it's not something you ever want to hear. Let's just leave it at that. So you know, he drove off. We yelled at the guy. My videographer turned the camera off, which, believe me, he would be the first one to tell you he wish he hadn't. And I don't know about you guys, but when I'm shooting and I'm not doing something, my finger muscle memory just turns the camera to off. And he flipped the camera off to go really run after all the bag and the lenses and everything that was happening. And I wish we had it. I wish he hadn't shut it off. I love him to death, but I wish he hadn't shut it off, because then we could actually positively identify these guys. And what's really scary is he could have run someone over. If there was anyone sitting next to my back, he could have easily run them over. I think that's the scariest part of it all. So after he drove over the gear, he kept on going. He hung a left and he drove off. Luckily, I was able to get down there and grab some pictures of his license plate. We filed a police report immediately on the spot because there's nobody was hit or something like that. The cops didn't come out. And so as a result, we filled out the police report. I had a workshop the next 2 days in Dallas that I conducted. And then following that workshop, we met with a Detective Brown down at the Fort Worth Police Department. I went through a lineup to look at potential suspects. I did ID someone that I think resembles the guy in the truck. There were two guys in the truck. And, you know, I will say this, they were laughing the whole time they were doing this. So to think that they accidentally turned up on this trail is ridiculous. You have to drive up that trail. You have to drive up the embankment just to come up there, and they were hooting and hollering, and they clearly were getting a kick out of scaring us, which is really a creepy thing to do. I think the number one question I get is, well, you have the license plate. Why aren't they arrested? This doesn't make any sense. And I agree. And so I'm hoping that this comes to some sort of a conclusion. Believe me, we have done everything we can. We spent 2 hours at the police department filling out statements, so on and so forth. I think the real hang-up is, you know, just because you have a license plate, you may know who the, you definitely know who the owner of the truck is. The hard part is proving who the driver was. All the owner has to say is, I wasn't driving, and then it gets stuck. So I think the police are trying to do what they can, but I think that's where the hang-up is right now. I haven't heard anything since we left. It's been 6 days since the event. I think the biggest lessons to be learned here are ensure your gear. Have backup cameras for when stuff like this happens. Have backup lenses. And if somebody does do something reckless, do what you can to prosecute this person. And we will prosecute this guy. I will fly back to Fort Worth to prosecute this guy if I need to in court. At the end of the day, be grateful for your life and be grateful that nobody was hurt. And, you know, this could have been so much worse. And I'm so glad that it wasn't. And I'm grateful that gear can be replaced, but body parts and lives can't. And I'm very grateful that nobody was hurt. And I'm grateful for his sake, because having that on your conscience, having, if you hurt another human being or kill another human being, this could have gone much differently. So I'll talk to you guys later. And remember, you only have one chance to get it right. Bye.
Thank you so much, Jason, for taking the time to do that for us. I really appreciate it, brother. As photographers, it's important to take measures to not only protect your gear, but yourself when you're out there doing shoots, especially if there's no one else around. In this case, Jason had a crew with him, but for many of us, it's just ourselves and our subject, right? Now, when it comes to gear, your best bet is to get insurance. Here in the United States, it's about $600 or so a year, last I checked. And if you want replacement value, you're going to need to get what's called an inland marine policy, or you're just going to get the used value. And a lot of times insurance companies give you a lot less money than you were hoping for. You might have to buy a 5D Mark II that has 200,000 actuations on it when yours only had maybe, let's say, 80,000. So that's a problem. And if your gear is insured, you're not going to sweat it as much if some jerk runs over your stuff or somebody robs you. It's going to be a bad situation either way, but why make things worse than they need to be? When your stuff isn't insured is when really bad things happen. When thousands of dollars in gear are at risk, people tend to fight for that gear, and that's when people get beaten or worse, stabbed or shot. And it's just not worth your life, of course, right? I think it's smart to keep your gear as close to you as possible. And it also wouldn't hurt to maybe set up an old GoPro camera. They're not too bad if you buy a really, really old one that you can set up in a tree or somewhere that's kind of hidden, but it's aimed at your gear. That way, if anything happens, like Jason Lanier, you have video of the incident. And as for personal protection, that's going to be completely up to you to decide. Personally, I think it's pretty risky to be out in public with thousands of dollars in gear without taking at least some precautions. I know a number of photographers who make sure that they're armed just in case, and I'm not recommending you bring a gun with you. That's completely up to you. But you know what? If something happens and you pull a gun, that elevates things to a whole new level, and most people aren't going to want to deal with those consequences. So I think at very least, it's smart to carry something non-lethal like, let's say, pepper spray. And especially if you're a female. We've heard horror stories before. You know, no one ever thinks that bad things are going to happen to them, and yet they actually do. But hey, someone had no problem running over Jason's gear and coming close to running over people in his crew. And that was despite a decent amount of people being there, all with cameras, right, that recorded this incident and his license plate. I mean, this guy was pretty dumb. I tell you, it's the stupid people that you need to worry about. They have no problems putting people and their property at risk, just like this guy. Next. One of the glaringly missing pieces in Sony's E-mount lineup is a DSLR-like body that can handle sports and everything you throw at it. Now, I love my Sony gear, but like I always say, you wouldn't take any of it to the Olympics or the Super Bowl and be confident that you're actually going to get the job done at that level. You just wouldn't. But that may be changing. For many months now, we've been hearing rumors of what is said to be the Sony A9, a full-frame E-mount body said to take things to a whole nother level and is more DSLR-like. That would be the missing piece of the puzzle for those who want to shoot with something a lot more serious than the puny but awesome A6000 and A6300. As capable as those cameras are, and I own the A6000 myself and love it, the A6000 and even the A6300 just can't compete with the likes of the Canon 1DX Mark II and the Nikon D5. They just can't, and anyone telling you otherwise isn't being completely truthful. That, or they're not a sports photographer. These little bodies do a great job, but they just aren't designed to handle things at that level. But that's where something like this supposed A9 would come in. When it actually materializes, and I believe that it is coming and soon, it may actually be the real deal. Now, if you believe what's coming out of the Sony Alpha Rumors website and elsewhere, this body will feature unlimited raw burst shooting, and that is something that's definitely going to be helpful when it comes to shooting sports action and other things that are fast moving where you need to put a lot of frames downrange. According to SAR source, the A9 will be a, quote, giant leap, end quote, for Sony, and will be its flagship mirrorless body, much as those Canon and Nikon bodies are that I just mentioned. That same source isn't 100% positive that it's going to be called the A9, but this is the name that I've been hearing for months now from my contacts in the industry, so I think there's a pretty good chance that it will indeed be called the A9. If this camera is DSLR-like in its capabilities and build, and they want it to be seen as being positioned above the A7 series, calling it the A9 just makes sense. Now, the rumors also indicate that the A9 will have dual memory card slots, but the kicker here is that they're both going to be XQD format only. But that's okay, because those are really, really fast cards. You know, Sony's been trying to make this XQD format happen since the D4, I believe, and that had an XQD and a CF card slot in it. And as you may recall, the new Nikon D5 is available with dual XQD card slots. If this A9 can do unlimited raw burst shooting, it would definitely need to have a caliber of card like XQD to be able to handle that. You know, they used to be incredibly expensive, but for the most part, that's no longer an issue. Now, of course, if you have a camera right now that takes either CF or SD cards, you're going to be out of luck because you're going to be buying new XQD cards with this A9. But this body would be the natural choice for those who want to do sports and any kind of action, anything that needs a more robust body. It sounds like the A9 is going to fit the bill for that. About the supposed A9's ability to shoot pretty much endlessly, they say, quote, unlimited, the camera won't pause for buffering, end quote. Now, this is both a good and a bad thing. You know, the spray and pray type shooters are going to be burning through even more frames now when they're shooting their kids' game. So that might not be a good thing. That's going to be the downside of being able to shoot endlessly. I think that many are going to lay on the shutter and hope they get a great shot. And you know what? That's just not photography. You might as well just shoot video and pull frames at that point. But where being able to shoot endlessly comes in handy is when you're shooting something like football, let's say. The player, your son perhaps, breaks away from his defender. You're really excited because at any moment that ball is going to appear in the frame as his arms are outstretched, getting ready to receive that, and you've been firing away like crazy. Now, with older models, you may run out of frames as the buffer fills up, and you don't have any frames left to be able to get that actual catch, let alone as he dives across an opponent and scores a touchdown. I can't tell you how many parents I've shot alongside at high school football games who've done just that, they burned all their frames as Johnny was running down the field. And when it came to the most important part, catching the ball and scoring the touchdown, they didn't have any frames left. I mean, you really have to conserve those. But with something like the A9, that's not going to be a problem anymore if these rumors are true. So being able to shoot where the only restriction is the size of your card, that is nice. Now, Nikon's flagship, the D5, can do 12 frames per second at 20.8 megapixels for up to 200 frames before that buffer is going to fill. Canon's flagship, the 1DX Mark II, can do 14 frames a second, and those extra two do really make a lot of difference, at 20.2 megapixels for up to 170 shots. So those are unlimited, but in real everyday use, you're just never going to hit that buffer. And I believe it was former Sports Illustrated photographer Damian Strohmeyer that said when he shot the Pro Bowl and the Super Bowl with the 1DX Mark II by Canon, he never ever hit that buffer. I mean, unless you're laying on that shutter and shooting 170 shots in a row without taking your finger off it, you're never going to hit that. And why would you need 170 shots of anything? You just wouldn't. So those bodies are technically limited, but in real everyday use, you're just never going to hit that buffer. And if you are, you're doing photography wrong. Like I said, you want a video camera. Now, I don't have any inside info, but my guess is that we're going to see this Sony A9 sometime this summer, if not in September, by time Photokina in Germany comes around. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. If you're in business, especially with all the competition that's out there, it's important to be mindful of your advertising. And if you're a large brand like Gap Kids and you've got an ad agency and many people working on your campaigns, you would think that somebody would spot potential PR problems, right? Well, I guess not. Well, a bit of controversy broke out recently when a photo surfaced for an ad campaign for Gap Kids that had to do with a collaboration between TV host Ellen DeGeneres' brand ED, or maybe it's Ed, I don't know, featuring a dance group called Le Petit Cirque. That's French for the small circus, I believe. That or something else. I don't know. I don't speak French. I just try my best. Now, in the ad are three white girls and one black girl. And I think you see where this is going. Two of the white girls are in dance poses on the ends. And the one white girl who's pretty tall has her head on her hand and is resting her arm on the black girl. Yeah. Now, of course, it didn't take long for people to make a big deal about this online. I mean, within seconds, people were all over this thing. Now, obviously, Gap Kids didn't mean to offend anybody by this. They're not closet racists, but clearly, someone didn't fully think out this idea because in 2016, you've got to know that this is going to be a problem. You know, maybe it's just how things worked out for the photo. If you want to show racial diversity, you would put the black girl next to the white girl dead center, of course, and the other white girls on the end. That just makes sense. Because if you put the black girl on the side, then you're going to have people complaining about her being shoved to one side of the photo, and then that's going to be a problem. But since she's significantly shorter than the tall white girl in the middle, it made sense that the white girl would be leaning on the black girl, just because of size, no other reason. I mean, if you got someone taller than another person, it just makes sense to do it that way. It seems completely innocent to me. But that said, I can see how this would stir up some feelings. And if you're Black, I can understand how you might not at all be thrilled with this photo. And in my household, we're well aware of racial issues. Two of my kids are brown. That's one of the reasons why we moved out of Utah last November, so I totally get it. Now, over at The Root, writer Kirsten West Savali, a Black woman, said this, quote, "It becomes problematic when the Black child is positioned to be a white child's prop. Contrary to popular opinion, popular culture, and politics, Black women and girls are neither armrests, backdrops, nor firewalls, despite white supremacy literally placing its burdensome weight on our heads. This child deserved so much better, so do better. Gap or not, it's your business to lose." End quote. You know, it's that part at the end that should have someone at the Gap or the ad agency thinking hard on this one. While it shouldn't be a big deal anymore, these things still are sensitive, so why risk it? You just open yourself up to these kinds of controversies when you place a white person in a position above a Black one. And it really sucks that in 2016, this is even still a thing. You know, we've had a Black president here in the United States for nearly 8 years now. Hopefully, sometime in my lifetime, these things won't even cross anyone's minds anymore. That would be nice. But Twitter was, well, a Twitter with this one, saying, quote, "At Gap Kids, someone needs to get fired. It was ignorant in the first place to have one token Black girl, then you make her the armrest," end quote. Well, it didn't take long, but Gap issued an apology saying that it'll be replacing the controversial image with a different photo. As a spokesperson tells Fast Company's co-create site, quote, "As a brand with a proud 46-year history of championing diversity and inclusivity, we appreciate the conversation that has taken place and are sorry to anyone we've offended. This Gap Kids campaign highlights true stories of talented girls who are celebrating creative self-expression and sharing their messages of empowerment. We are replacing the image with a different shot from the campaign, which encourages girls and boys everywhere to be themselves and feel pride in what makes them unique," end quote. Now others are supporting the photo that ran, one of them being the mother of the two girls in the middle. That's right, they're sisters. Plot twist, huh? I bet you didn't see that coming now, did you? Me neither. As it turns out, the Black girl and the white girl leaning on her are actually adopted sisters. Their mom is Grey's Anatomy actress Brooke Smith, in fact. Now, filmmaker Matthew A. Cherry points out that an ad from Gap Kids in the past actually shows a Black girl leaning on a white girl in a similar way, but there was no outrage over that photo. In doing my research on this story, what I find more disturbing is a photo that ran in an online magazine called Bureau 24/7 about Dasha Zukova, editor-in-chief of Garage Magazine. In that photo, Zukova, a white woman, is sitting on a chair cushion attached to a partially nude Black woman underneath it. Now that photo, I think, is pretty offensive. Sitting on someone is a whole new ballpark than leaning on someone. Now, we ran a poll over at the Petapixel Mothership, and of the more than 2,000 people that have taken this poll so far, 91% thought the Gap Kids photo was fine, with 9% thinking it was insensitive. In the end, I don't think it would hurt for people to be more racially sensitive, of course, but I think that it's important to temper that with maybe not thinking that everything is a plot to keep people down. There's always going to be someone who's offended, though, and hopefully we can get to a point where things like this just aren't an issue anymore. You know, can't we all just get along? Okay, the kids totally aren't going to get that reference. Look it up. Next. Today's listener question comes from Terrell, who sent in his question via our voicemail widget.
Hi, my name is Terrell, and I'm calling because I want to know, when should a speed light die? What are the signs that a speed light is going to die? I have a Canon 430 EX2 that I've used for a while, but I'm starting to notice that the power output isn't as strong as it once was. My last two events that I used it, it was significantly lower than what it had been previously. And I'm starting to wonder if this is like a telltale sign that my speed light is getting ready to die on me. Can you tell me what things I should look for? And is there any pattern before a speed light dies? I love the podcast, and hopefully you can answer my question. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your question, Terrell. I appreciate the time you took to do that. You know, it's really hard to determine how long a speed light is going to last, as there's just so much going on in there. The flash tube can burn out, the wiring can get all jacked, the hot shoe gets worn. There's just so many moving pieces here. It really could be anything. And you know what? These things aren't going to last forever, unfortunately. But what I want for you to try first, and you may have already done this, is check to make sure that you don't have flash exposure compensation turned on your camera. A lot of people forget about that. And I don't know which model Canon body you're using, but look for the lightning bolt symbol with the plus and minus sign next to it. Press that button, and if you're not set at zero, that could definitely be the issue that you're having with the power output. You know, if it's set to minus one, for instance, your flash is putting out one stop less light than you were expecting. And if it's at minus two, minus three, a lot less light. So you're putting out half as much light when you go from minus one to minus two exposure compensation. Also, what you want to do is check the flash unit itself and make sure you don't have exposure compensation dialed in on the flash. Because if you do, that's going to explain what's happening there. That needs to be zeroed out just like it needs to be zeroed out on your camera. Make sure everything is at the zero position, then take photos and see if you're having this problem. If you are, that's not good. But short of sending it in for repair, it's really hard to say exactly what's going on with your flash unit. It could very well be on its last leg, who knows? I mean, hey, since you left this voicemail, it could have died. And if it has, I'm sorry for your loss. In all seriousness though, there are cheap alternatives to replace that unit, and you won't find the name Canon anywhere on them. For instance, Young Nuo's YN568EX Mark IIc, that's the Canon version, is just $101 US, does everything that your current flash unit does from Canon, and more. I mean, it does high-speed sync, ETTL, the whole kit and caboodle. In my opinion, these Young Nuo flashes are as good as the Canon branded counterparts. I've never had a problem with mine. I've got this exact same unit that I'm recommending to you, except for it's the Nikon version. So if you have to replace your flash, consider doing so with a cheaper but equally capable alternative. In fact, for the cost of the real deal from Canon, you could pick yourself up three or four of them, right? I mean, they're only $101 each. Even if you just bought two of them, you could have one that you use all the time and a spare that you keep in your bag for when the other one breaks or whatever. Or you could also do some really cool multiple flash setups and get really creative with your lighting. So there are a lot of options here. I hope that really helps you out, Terrell. Please drop me a line. I'm dying to know what's going on with your flash here, whether you have exposure compensation dialed in on your flash or on your camera or what's going on. You know, it might have been accidentally turned on at some point, and that's the only thing that's wrong with your flash, and it could last many, many more years for you. So thank you so much for your question, and I appreciate the time you took to leave it. I love answering them here on the show, and you would think with an audience as large as ours that we would get a ton of them, but we really don't. So I'm putting the challenge out there to our audience. If you want to know something, go ahead and leave me a voicemail at petapixel.com/podcast. Hit the voicemail widget, leave a question for me, or say hi, whatever, and we'll answer it here on the show. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 63 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LenSshark. And if you'd like to help support the show, don't forget to claim your 30-day free trial at freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. If you haven't seen it yet, make sure you head on over to mattgranger.com/toglife. Look for episode 19 and you can see my appearance on his show. We had a pretty good time together, and I think people are really enjoying it, and I'd like you to check it out. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 64. Well, it's f8 and 250 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.